It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Presented by Green Ventures Landscaping for homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us in 1 hour, and we will break down all things Tennessee Titans with him as the preseason is now gone and the initial 53-man roster has been set for the Tennessee Titans. And, Joe, 2 weeks from today, we'll be breaking down Titans and Jets one way or another. I don't know if that's good, bad, what it's going to be, but I do very much look forward to our show 2 weeks from today.
Yeah. Great that we get to wait 2 weeks for actual football. I guess it's a week from Wednesday? Is that right?
That's correct.
Week from Wednesday would be the first NFL game. So, yep. But yeah,
long. Then we get to watch the international game a week from Thursday down there in Australia.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
Sure, it'll be interesting. Enjoy that flight back, losing team. Can we go to this? I said this in the
sure.
first hour, and I asked Ian to cut it up, and then I just keep failing to throw it to it. You know, we talked in the first hour, for those who missed it, about, you know, the not playing the starters, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into that again before the show ends. But I did think that this explanation from Robert Saleh about joint practices versus preseason games was interesting. There are a couple things in here I hadn't thought of before, so I thought it was worth playing.
So I want to make sure, like, The preseason stuff is still very, very, very important, the games. But it's for the guys who are working to try to make this roster. You know, the ones who everyone kind of knows who the first 25 or 30 guys are. It's the remaining 20 to 23 or 25. And making sure that we get those guys as many opportunities as they can. But to be under the lights, to be in live situations, to be in all those different scenarios, like, that's where the value is. And, like, you never want to sacrifice that. But today was more about getting those guys those opportunities so we could really solidify the back end of the roster.
Can you talk about the value of the joints for the
guys who know they're going to be here? Those joints are extremely, like, you're getting more scheme. It's not game planning, but you're getting more volume. You're seeing more from the other team. It's the intensity is a lot higher. You're not as cautious with regards to trying to avoid injury with people on the ground. And then on top of it, from a volume standpoint, it's actually more voluminous in the sense of you're getting 50 reps in less than an hour and a half of – it's just condensed, so the conditioning level is harder. So just overall, it's a much more true evaluation, if you will, rather than just have a regular old practice and then send them out for 10 to 15 plays. You're getting 50 really good quality reps against another opponent, seeing different schemes, and it's pretty intense.
So that was Robert Saleh. Voluminous, he used.
Hell
good
of
stuff
a word.
There.
Hell
nice
of a word.
Stuff. Vrabel's not using that word, you know?
Oh, heck no. Big Ro doesn't have that kind of vocab.
Hope he enjoyed the Father Ryan game the other night, by the way.
Yeah, someone asked about that. His I think his older son actually is a volunteer coach.
Yep.
I think that's right. I read that in the Tennessean. So I think that is the answer to that. But what'd you think of that answer by Saleh on joints versus preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I on the surface, I agree. Like, you're certainly seeing a lot more in the joint practice. Like, the volume of reps is higher. You're going up against – it's not like people are going vanilla defense the whole time in the joint practice. Like, you get to see some actual looks and some scheme. But, if you look around the league, like, I think even that has become more limited the last couple of years. And some of it just depends entirely on who you're going up against. Like, you know, say what you will about LaFleur, but he was talking about this the other day you know, they had a joint practice against the Packers had a joint practice against the Cardinals last week, and his brother is the head coach of the Cardinals. So when your brother is the head coach of the other team, you're pretty confident that the practice film and everything that you're trying out there is not going to end up in the hands of somebody else. Whereas he brought up something, they had a joint practice a few years ago against the Texans, and there was somebody on staff that was brothers of another coach on staff, and he's like, yeah, we're not showing anything in this joint practice because I have no confidence that the film's not going to end up in their hands. So some of it just depends on, like, who are you practicing against? Like, who do those people know around the league? How likely are they to give up that film to somebody else who may be playing you this year? There's all this crap that goes into it now that just makes it, I think, different than it used to be. But I hear everything he's saying. Clearly he values it. I would still say there's something about playing in the game, particularly like you mentioned earlier at the quarterback position when you know you can be hit, that I just don't think you can simulate in a joint practice setting. Yeah, the scheme stuff is important, and you're going up against defenses that are actually giving you looks, and there's extreme value in that. But you still know in a joint practice session, if you're the quarterback, that nobody's going to touch you, or at least they shouldn't. Like, you're not supposed to touch the quarterback, and I just think that totally changes the game at that position.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing. It's also, I think it was a good explanation. I hadn't really thought about the point of, like, the voluminous
yes.
work that you can get. And it's well taken. Like, you can cram a lot of work into a shorter period of time, whereas, you know, you're standing around in these games and you need a commercial break and whatever. But also, I do feel like there's, like, you're starting offensive line. You get a drive, like, it's okay, you actually have a consequence for a penalty, for a false start. And also, if you get rolling, you're on a drive. Now you get that conditioning of, okay, this is a drive. Everybody's watching. It's real football. It's a play clock. And, you know, just things like that, yeah, you try to have those conditions on the practice field and stuff when you're doing best versus best. But it's still a little bit different. And if there wasn't any value, then Saleh just wouldn't play those guys at all, yep. Right? I mean, he found some reason to play them, right? The YouTube chat has a lot of stuff that I feel like we need to get to. But Tyrus, I must say, yeah. You see this? PK talking about,
Robert, what is the value of a joint?
It's on brand, you know?
I mean, that's perfect, PK. You know, if anybody knows the value of a joint, PK, that'd be you, buddy.
A-Dub says, does getting burnt for a 97-yard bomb something you practice in the joints? Well, to that point.
I smoke weed constantly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kuharski did have this stat. Joe, I mean, you tell me what this means. Because, I mean, in two of these three games, the starting defense was out there. But this is the entire preseason. Curtis Rourke, who started for the Niners in that game, Drew Locke, who started at quarterback for Seattle in that game, and then Tyson Bagent the other day, combined for an 88.9% completion percentage, 9.2 yards per attempt, and a 127.04 passer rating against the Titans in the preseason. Again, two of those were starting defense was on the other side. What do you make of that?
Yeah, they had
that's
some...
a heck of a stat.
Yeah, they had some rough months. Again, like the one the other night, that's a guy that you don't expect to be playing this year. So, but also I still wonder, like, as I watch that play, you know, yes, he slipped after he'd gotten torched, but the way he was playing that, I'm like, there's no way that you are sitting on it like that unless you think you have a safety behind you, which he didn't.
Yeah.
So it feels like – so that one, I don't know, it looked to me like there was some kind of a mix-up with the coverage. We know that against Seattle there was a mix-up, and they messed up the exchange on that, and you got a free runner for an easy touchdown. So definitely, some of these guys are going to play, some of them aren't going to play, but it seems like they've got some stuff to figure out.
It does. Hopefully, I mean – that's where the scheme of it starts to come in a little bit, and you're showing more on defense, and you know, there's an expectation over the next couple of weeks too that you get some of that stuff worked out in terms of the communication. But yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that the ability to cover people is not a big concern of mine about the Titans heading into the year right now. Like it was
It was bad in the preseason, their ability to cover people.
Yeah, and like, so you expect Winston to make some mistakes, but Imani Hooker, you know, where is he right now? And then these corners they signed, you know, Flott in particular, you know, what is he going to be? Yep. Once you get into these games full time, I think that's the most, let's take Cam out of it. I think the secondary is the most alarming part of the whole preseason, while I think the offensive line was probably the most encouraging part. And the thing is, going into the preseason, we thought this might be a bad, bad offensive line, and maybe this secondary is going to be good. And they both of them said, not so fast.
Wes in Clarksville says, Saleh's not giving me good vibes. I think we'll be looking for a coach and a GM in 2 years. One texter says, I hope there's a world where we look back at these moments and laugh at our concern levels and tracking all the nonsense from practice and preseason. Cameron says, Levis is more goofy, but Cam makes a Levis play almost every game. The grounding play in game one, the ridiculous fumble in game two, they're very similar. We did have several people when we were talking about Levis reach out and be like, so you guys talking about Levis or you talking about Cam? Which one?
Someone also threw out the Levis-Cam stats and how similar they are, and it's like, well, that's interesting, but, you know, I mean, Cam may be exactly where Levis is now in a couple of years. He may be. I would not say he's made Levis. I would not say those are Levis plays. Like, let's give Levis the full credit for what a credit. Levis play is, okay? Yeah. I mean, my goodness, he's out there trying to bowl for first downs. I mean, hey, come on. A lot of stuff here on the YouTube chat that I want to get to quickly, because, I mean, it is rocking today. One is, have you seen this stuff about the Cam? This may be something to talk about more later, but this Cam's dad DMing people.
A little bit about it.
Like, I don't know if it's real or not, so I don't want to get too – it does look like it's real. You better stop that.
I hope
crap.
It's not. Yeah.
I hope it's not real. It looks like it is his account, and people are sharing this all over the place. And he's, like, looking into people's finances. It's like, dude, please. If that's – that needs to stop. I got to give Brent a shout out for saying Callahan should be the coffee coordinator. Jared, the psych ward is like, we might need something more extreme for that.
Different wing of the psych ward?
Yeah. Like Cam last week, this became a big thing. It went, you know, like, what's it, Shannon Sharp and Ocho Cinco were talking about it, and it's on Awful Announcing. Did you think that Cam, with the guy, whatever that guy's name is from the dark web, asking Cam a question, did you think he was childish in his answer to that?
Childish? No. I think he was definitely caught off guard. I think when Cam went back,
but the question was totally normal. Like, just assess your, if you decide to ask someone back, I mean, you know.
You better be prepared.
Yeah.
I mean, look, so shout out to Stilly for being like, yeah, not well. Like, I thought it was, yeah. And shout out, I was actually texting with Stilly about this. Like, shout out to Cam Ward, I thought actually answered the question after. Like, I've seen plenty of those type of interactions, Joe, where, like, you ask the question, you know, the athlete, well, what do you think? The reporter says what they think, and then it just totally shuts down after that. Like, I thought Cam gave him a decent answer after that, too. So I didn't think it was childish.
No, it was not childish. I mean, you know, again, I would just answer the question, because there was nothing wrong with the question.
Yeah,
just answer the question. But if you're going to come back, and then, you know, I'm glad. No, that's fine. I mean, I think there's a consciousness that Cam has, maybe in particular for – I forgot his name again, whatever, the dude, you know. But I thought we're not saying his name. Isn't he who shall not be named?
Voldemort?
Exactly. No, but I maybe there's a consciousness for him, you know, someone who shows up every once in a while in the troll role. But also, I think he's got to be conscious of around the league. These guys know if everybody's talking about you.
Yeah.
Dan Orlovsky's breaking down your tape and is pointing out.
No, they know.
Yeah. So I like, and again, that does bring it back to, well, maybe that was a factor.
Maybe so.
I would fear for this organization if you chose, let's not have someone's feelings be hurt over work that could help them.
I would too.
I think it's a big boy league. Like, you're going to get, right? Like, you're going to get criticism all the time, and it's not like Nashville is New York. So I would hope that's not the case. But I guess I'd leave the door cracked as a possibility.
615-737-1025
is our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Titans. Plus, week zero of college football this past weekend. Bill Belichick telling us all to pound sand. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Shout out to Scotty Scheffler for winning the FedEx Cup yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to spend 4 or 5 segments on that today, but we hadn't got to it yet.
Here you go. Let's get the golf talk going. Who's in?
Who's ready? Boy, a lot of people are pointing out the PK, asking him a question about joints on the text line. I think we've created a monster with Kowarski around here.
I mean.
Robin, how often do you talk about joints? Do you like the zigzag big ones or the smaller ones? I'm good with both. The orange or the whites, Robert?
There's going to come a point.
I know way too much about that.
There's going to come a point where he just does not talk to us ever again. We could be approaching that point. I don't know.
He opens the door. Who has ever called them joints? Joint practices. All of a sudden, you're going to call them joints?
Listen, I'm going to be totally honest with you. For the sake of our show, for the sake of Titans fans around here who have been through the ringer, I'm hoping that they get off to a fast start this year and we get to talk about, actual football games throughout the course of the year rather than pivoting to draft talk by the time October 1st comes around. Let me just establish that first. I will say, though, if they don't and if they're bad, I cannot wait for the Kuharski question to Solon like week 7 or 8 of,
Robert, would you say that's all gas, no brakes out there?
I can't wait.
Either
way, we're going to be fine.
He's
but I can't
ready.
Wait.
And that is the official slogan, is that right? But that
all gas, no brakes.
But that's his life philosophy,
yeah.
Right? It's not like this team slogan. It's like just all gas.
It's on the wall. Not there.
That's exciting.
Robert, would you say all gas, no brakes?
I mean, a repeat of the, Mike, is this going good to great?
Every loss that year.
Is this good to great?
Vrabel just wanted to kill him. just wanted to strangle him.
So I guess what I'm saying is either way, we're going to be fine. Either the Titans are going to play better football or Kuharski's going to unleash it here in about 6 or 7 weeks.
I mean, thank goodness for PK. Don't ever retire, PK.
Oh, man. Dennis says PK's laptop bag is full of zigzags and ginger chews. I forgot about the ginger chews. That was good stuff.
Yeah.
Between the ginger
quote
chews.
Quote, unquote, ginger chews. Yeah.
The ginger chews and Rex Rhodes pocket mints that were out there. People ready to go.
Some nice snacks.
Yeah.
Ready for football season.
Yeah. Week zero of college football taking place this weekend. There was not a ton to be excited about. The headlining game was North Carolina and TCU across the pond over in Ireland. And how about Bill Belichick, Joe? There's all this talk about Bill Belichick and North Carolina this offseason and how bad they're going to be. And Bill Belichick just puts his nose to the grindstone, gets out there and works, and a nice 15-10 defensive struggle of a victory for the North Carolina Tar Heels, who are now 1-0. Joe Rexroad, your thoughts?
Well, last year they had the opening drive against TCU, looked awesome, scored a touchdown. Michael Jordan and Mia Hamm were like, yes, we're amazing. Like all of Tar Heel Nation is like, oh, this is going to be so awesome. And then the rest of the game, they just got, what'd they lose, 48-7?
It was
just absolutely horrific. All of last season was horrific. I feel like there was some stat that is like, it's the biggest lead they've had against an FBS team or whatever in his tenure. I don't know. But, look, it quiets it down a little bit. It's amazing how low the bar has gotten for Bill Belichick, right? Like, ooh, 15 points and a win over TCU. Wow, congratulations. But, hey, they were not expected to win. They were underdogs in the game.
They were.
Some people, I mean, Ralph Russo, friend of the show, at TCU as a playoff team, for the record. Their guy, Jaden Craig from Harvard, did not look very good. I didn't think North Carolina looked all that good either, but they did look like they've got some guys on D, and it looked like a little bit of a Belichick kind of D. So maybe you get Mike Lombardi out of there,
and get some of that toxicity out of there, and maybe they'll be okay. He'll be okay. He'll have a third year. Because a lot of people have just assumed this is going to be it for him.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I don't know that I'm convinced after one game that it's going to be some turnaround in North Carolina. But they did win. I did not expect them to win. Like, I thought they'd lose by a couple touchdowns. It does make me wonder, how much does this say about North Carolina and how much maybe does this say about TCU? That's the beauty of week one. We don't really know those things yet, or I guess week zero in this instance. But, hey, you know, they took a lot of crap this offseason. Shout out to Belichick for winning the first game.
Yeah, and it's funny because everybody – I feel like more people were rooting for Belichick. One, he's just been so bash at this point, you know. Like I said, the bar's lowered so much. But also, TCU – I've been waiting for like a reasonable explanation for this ridiculous revoking of credentials of this reporter who reported on the locker room fight that got a kid kicked off the team and everything. And there's just nothing. I mean, that reporter was in Ireland, Stephen Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. That's the one outlet that covers them. He's in Ireland, apparently bought a ticket and was quote unquote covering the game from the stands.
Okay.
Because they wouldn't let it. It's just absurd to me. I also have to wonder, like, okay, so TCU revoked his credential, so the game itself can't give the guy, like, just a credential to be in the press box? Anyway, we'll see how that works out. But Sonny Dykes looks like a sensitive baby through all this stuff, and that needs to be rectified. So between that and then there's no one there to ask him questions about some of his terrible calls on fourth downs in the game. That's unfortunate. I guess it worked out for him, though.
I guess so. Yeah, we'll see what that ends up meaning. But 15-10, defensive struggle, they win. I watched a lot of the Memphis-UNLV game on Saturday night. Fun game out there. I was texting you. I had no idea that Jackson Arnold, who was the five-star quarterback, former Oklahoma player, who I think then transferred to Auburn and now has ended up at UNLV, had no clue he was the quarterback at UNLV, so good to figure that out the other night. The only unfortunate part of that game was Urban Meyer was in the booth for like 10 minutes in the second quarter, so that was tough. But other than that, good game between Memphis and UNLV. And how about Memphis getting a big win on the road, 27-21 the final?
Hey, Charles Huff is a good coach. I think Charles Huff might he was up for some Power Four jobs. He has been. That's a heck of a win, and I think that guy, and I'm sorry for any Memphis fans listening, because it's like every time they get a good coach, like, oh, well, that guy's going to leave soon. But that's a big win for him. That's a big win for them. I think you have to consider them, you know, the group of six real contender. That was a game that to me was kind of an elimination game. High expectations for Dan Mullen with your guy Jackson Arnold, who at times looked good, but then at times it was like, oh, yeah, that's familiar to me. Now, late in the game, they couldn't block. They lost their center, and they couldn't block them to save their life. I mean, he was absolutely buried. But huge win for Memphis. And there's something. They are worth watching. Their QB was a star for Western Florida last year, and he was not perfect, but he's got some ability. Running around, making some big throws. That could be a fun year for the Tigers.
Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock on the program today. We will get into all things Titans with him now that the preseason has wrapped up. We got the Rob Rant coming up later this hour. And it is game week for Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So, what are expectations for these teams this year? We'll get into that. Take your thoughts on expectations for the Vols and the Doors. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at 102.5 The Game for live shows and exclusive content. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We'll have the Rob Rant here at 7:45. Corey Curtis talking all things Tennessee Titans at 8 o'clock on the program today. Joe, it's game week for both Tennessee and Vanderbilt. The Vols taking on Furman later this week. I just looked, they're a 46.5-point favorite in that one to begin the season.
Okay.
And Vanderbilt taking on Austin Peay later this week as well. We're going to get tomorrow into, I guess, our official predictions for Vanderbilt and Tennessee, because I'm going to be gone later this week and can't do it later this week, so it's totally selfish on my part.
Okay.
But that's what we're doing tomorrow on the show at one point. Before we get to that, how do we kind of establish what the expectations are for each of those teams this year? What are fair expectations? What should be the minimum of kind of what you're looking for if you're a Vanderbilt fan, if you're a Tennessee fan heading into this year? Let's start on the Vanderbilt front with the first year removed from Diego Pavia. You're coming off the best season in program history. How do you kind of define what expectations should be for the 2026 version of the Vanderbilt Commodores?
Making a bowl game. That's, and some Vanderbilt fans may dispute that and say that's not enough. Inside the program, I would expect them to say, no, we have a higher expectation than that now. But I think you look at their schedule, you look at the transition at quarterback, the fact that, you got a true freshman who I still think will start at some point, but isn't to start the season, is going to play in the opener. I think if they can get to, and I understand, like, you can make a bowl game at 5-7, academics are good. But, like I'm saying, six, seven wins, to me, is a good season for Vanderbilt. That's a good bridge season with what you hope at the end of it. And this is where they are, like Tennessee. You have a young quarterback that everybody's saying, well, wait till next year with that young QB. You keep that guy in the fold, and then you can start pushing for bigger things next year. That's what I think it is. I think it's a bridge year. If you can get to a bowl game in a bridge year, that's good. Now, I will say one game that I looked at as like, ooh, this is could be interesting, that after watching them play, I don't know. NC State looked like trash Saturday.
They did. They got destroyed.
C.J. Bailey looked awful. Their defense looked terrible. That's the first quote-unquote real game for Vanderbilt. Although, by the way, I continue to have a child who is assuring me that Austin Peay is beating Vanderbilt Saturday. So, I mean, Chris Parsons and and Austin Peay, I mean, they are interesting.
Vanderbilt is a 30.5-point favorite in that game, just for the record.
Yeah. For the record, Brennan, 30.5. Also, don't gamble. But you're at Auburn. That's an interesting game. You're at Georgia. Ole Miss coming in here could be a wagon this year. You do have Arkansas in here, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State. Like their SEC schedule could definitely be worse.
Yeah.
They're missing a lot of really good teams. They get Mississippi State, Kentucky, Arkansas. And, I mean, at Auburn is not easy, but, like, that's, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to be with Golish. They're at Florida and, of course, the big one with Tennessee. I think I can find 6 wins on that schedule.
I would agree. Like, I think I've said this. You don't have to get back to 10-2. But, like, showing that this is not some fluke, like, what you can't do this year if you're Vanderbilt football is exactly what somebody just texted us that they were going to do, and that is Vandy's going back to being Vandy. You're going 4-8. Like, you can't let that happen if you're Clark Lee and Vanderbilt this year, because if it does, that's exactly what people are going to say. They're going to say, well, you had Diego Pavia. It was a nice couple-year run with him, and now you guys are going back to being the doormat of the SEC. Like, you can't allow yourself to be that. I don't think they will let that happen this year. I think 6 or 7 wins is perfectly reasonable for an expectation for Vanderbilt this year. Now, anything beyond that, I think you'd be talking about a really good year for Vanderbilt. And I know, again, to your point, if you tell them that, they're going to be like, yeah, well, screw you. We're trying to make the college football playoff. I get all that. Maybe they will. We'll see what that looks like. But you can't allow yourself just to totally bottom out. I think it's really important from that perspective this year. Let's head to the phone line. Welcome in Adam in Portland to the program. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
I think there's a chance they're going to be really good, man. Like, the reason I say that, because I always like Pavia, but then he's like Manziel, except probably more annoying, and then you take him to the professional level and nobody wants him, not even like give him a tryout and then cut him. So I'm like, okay, maybe it was Clark Lee. And then you see Vanderbilt's defense is pretty good the whole time. I don't know. I think they're going to be really good, man. Like, just piecing it all together, I think it was probably more Clark Lee than Pavia, if I had to guess. We don't know until they start playing, but that's my guess. I think they're going to be really good.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it. I mean, look, Clark Lee is totally changed his perspective as a coach, right? Like, that, a couple years ago, I've talked about this. We were talking about, what does Clark Lee have to do to avoid being fired heading into this year, which is hilarious to think back on right now. But that's where it was with Clark Lee. And, they, we've talked about it. They changed their offense. He was open to changing the way that he does things. They brought in Pavia, all those things. Well, now it feels like the program's in a much better spot, and he's talked about this as the most talented roster overall that they've had. I think all that's great. I still think, you know, Pavia, regardless of what's happened in the NFL,
you're
talking about a heck of a college football player. I mean, he's a Heisman runner-up.
Yeah, don't conflate. Lots of great college players don't make it in the NFL, and it doesn't change what they did in college. He was a great player. Hendon Hooker was a great player at Tennessee. Yeah. Well, he may be done in the NFL now. Scheme, coach, those are important. But, yeah, I wouldn't conflate those two. Real quick on Vanderbilt, I see one game where, like, I can't see them winning it. And it's the one at Georgia. One game. Every other game in that schedule, because, I mean, Bama comes in here at Florida. Hard games, but then you have games that, like, I mean, they should beat Arkansas. To me, they should beat Mississippi State. They have a really good chance to win at Kentucky. And obviously, who knows in that finale against the Vols. By the way, I just realized that's already locked in as a night game. Well, that sucks. Anyway, only one no-chancer and probably four right off the bat that are like, you should absolutely win those games. That, to me, should add up in the end to a bowl game.
All right, real quickly, expectations for Tennessee. Caleb has texted in, says anywhere from 8-4 to 10-2, his expectations. How do you define what success looks like this year for the Vols?
To me, it's you're playing for – it's funny. It's almost like how we've talked about the Tides. Like, can you play meaningful games, you know, late in the season? I mean, Tennessee in the hunt for a playoff spot in November. The games that matter in November. I mean, that to me would be success. Bottom line, if they go 8-4, I mean, that's not a bad year. That would be disappointing. And, of course, if you get the four early enough, then you're not going to be playing those meaningful games in November. But 8-4, I think, would be okay. 9-3. With them, every time we'd bring them up, I bring up, like, how does Faison Brandon look and how does he develop and what are you thinking about the future with him? I mean, I just think that's a huge part of this. Like, what does it look like? But if we're going strict numbers, 8-4, I think would be a successful year.
I think right in that neighborhood, 8-4, 9-3. The thing about their tough games is all of them, with the exception of one. And, you know, I say tough games, I'm talking SEC games. The Georgia Tech game, I have no idea. We'll see kind of what that looks like. But that's on the road, so you have to keep that in mind. But you got Texas at home. You got Alabama at home. You got LSU at home. Can you win a couple of those? Can you win one of those? What does that look like if you do? I mean, going on the road to Texas A&M is going to be tough, right? Like, that's a tough hill to climb.
Is that their own? I guess I would say that way. I don't give them much of a chance, but I don't even know that I'd say no chancer on that one.
I don't think there's a game they have where there's a no chancer.
Like in some years when, like, Georgia or Bama, you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Put the L down right now.
It just all depends on the quarterback. Like, how good is – Faison Brandon early on. And look, you talk to people around Tennessee's program, and I heard Josh Pate talking about this the other day. Like, if you really think about it, particularly if Brandon develops this year, I mean, you could be talking about a legitimate threat in 2027 with some of the guys that they're going to have on their roster and some of the guys they got coming in. I mean, the DGG at running back. There's a lot of things. Like,
he's running for 3,500 yards right away. So.
Yeah, like it's like Josh Pate talked about that. He's like, hey, Tennessee's going to be a national championship contender in 2027. Like, oh, we'll see. In the meantime, what can you do in 2026? Like, you know, we talk about 8-4. There are Vols fans that are going to be out there and saying, you guys are spending all this money. We're supposed to be okay with 8-4 this year? No, thank you. Like, I get it. There's a lot of money they're spending. So, I think 8-4 is about the baseline of where people are going to be happy. And that's probably baked into it, Faison Brandon showing pretty good progress throughout the year. Anything less than that, and it's going to get loud.
But let's say that the defense, you know, like there's no edge rushing and it's bad. Then you'd also start to look at Jim Knowles, you're a genius. But I mean, I could see like a 7-5 season where Brandon looks like this is going to be good, but they lose close games, their defense is bad, right? Like, I still think you could make the case. It's just like, well, you got to fix things in the portal on defense to some extent, but the offense might be incredible next year. And I still think I could see how that team could be viewed as a contender.
I could see it. I think 7-5 is going to be a tough sell to this fan base. I just do. I think that's where we're at right now. I think it's going to be a tough sell. The Rob Rant coming up next. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Do your job.
Let's get the golf talk going. Who's in?
Who's ready?
We'll go golfing once a year.
Don't talk ever. I'm talking, not you.
Have I mentioned Paul Kuharsky? Have I mentioned that's my name?
Robert, how often do you talk about joints?
Do you like the zigzag big ones or the smaller ones? I'm good with both.
My joints are all fine.
There's just barefoot.
I'm checking the feet out.
Like, I don't want to be gross, but I do like steaks bloody.
Would you rather have foot pain, gout, or torn up stomach?
Yeah, I went to Cleveland, Ohio for the first time. I would not recommend it.
It is time for the Rob Rant here on the program. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. I've forgotten about the joints comment from PK that he actually made. It's good stuff.
That's a hell of a find. So I assume he was like talking about like his
actual joints
knees.
Rather than recreational joints.
He says joints a lot.
He does.
Apparently.
He does. It's good to know. So it was week zero of college football this weekend, Joe. So there's, you know, a twinge of excitement. I feel like week zero, a lot of times you look at it and you're like, okay, so college football's back. There's really not any good games that I'm all that interested in. But, hey, at least college football's on the screen. So I found myself, as I typically do in week zero, Joe, you know, I had a plan of, yeah, maybe I'll check out a little bit of TCU and North Carolina and, you know, the nightcap Memphis UNLV could be like an underrated fun game. So I'll probably watch a little bit of both of those games, and that'll be about it. And, of course, the day rolls around, and I've turned on the USC game against San Jose State, and I'm watching Hawaii and Stanford. I'm like, yeah, I just can't help myself. It's college football, so I'm watching. So as I'm watching these games, I look up, and I'm like, okay, so it's USC, it's San Jose State. Did anybody in Los Angeles get the memo that there's a football game going on? Because the crowd's almost completely empty. And you start to see some screenshots of what the crowd at the Coliseum looked like at kickoff, and it looked like it was friends and family night in sections out there. Like, it was just nobody was there. So I'm like, okay, well, that's weird. And then later on in the afternoon, I turn on Hawaii and Stanford, and you look up in the crowd, and it's like, wow, there's no one at this game. Like, does anybody in California like college football? Like, is college football just not a thing in California anymore? I saw The Athletic yesterday, not to rip your workplace, but came out with a story about how the seats were hot at the Coliseum. I'm like, oh, the seats were hot because it was like 93 degrees. Okay. Let me tell you something. You ever been to Neyland Stadium in the early part of September with the metal bleachers that have been out there? You want to talk about hot seats. That's never stopped a Tennessee crowd from being there. Does anybody out west like college football anymore? Have we totally killed the sport now that the Pac-12 is gone? Do all the Stanford fans look at it and say, oh, my God, we're in the ACC. I'm not going to football games anymore. Like, have we just killed West Coast college football? Does nobody care?
That's a fair question. Stu tweeted out a picture of it. And he was like, oh, the USC spring game. Oh, interesting. Didn't know that was
– I mean, that's embarrassing.
It's bad.
I don't care that it's San Jose State. That's embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, and so there was a lot of talk about weather. Some people who cover the Trojans are like, you people don't understand how hot, et cetera, et cetera. Now, to the credit of, I think it was like a USC fan. This is me on Twitter helping out again. I think it was, or it might have been somebody else who covers them, but it's like, yeah, guys, yes, it was hot. So let's go back to, and they went back to like a game of like 09, like just as hot. Look at the crowd, totally different. Why? Because that was still like the Pete Carroll era, and they were still really good, and there was excitement around the program. I mean, to answer your question, I mean, I've definitely experienced out there, like, you got to really have a compelling reason to get people to go to, like, a lot of things out there because, like, they have the beach and all this other stuff to do. So, yeah, the passion for college football there is not close. That's part of why the Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore, right? I mean, yeah. It really is.
So there is that. It's a massive stadium. It's way too big of a stadium. So even when they have like 80,000, it looks partially empty. But this crowd was atrocious. And I think it speaks to, yes, the West Coast in general difficulty of getting the passion stirred up. And also speaks to the program and Lincoln Riley and the fact that he does not have momentum right now or does not have people excited. But it is a bad look, and making excuses for it is silly.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I mean, if you see some of these shots, and to your point, like the Coliseum is massive out there. But it's like, it's pick your own section night at USC, at the USC game the other night. It's crazy. And the Stanford game was basically the same way. I mean, I did enjoy in the Stanford game, like how many times they just went over to Andrew Luck on the sideline of him walking around over there and like somebody got hurt and Andrew Luck can sprint it out on the field and like help the dude off the field. I was like, good for Andrew Luck as the GM.
He's doing it all.
Stanford football. He's like the trainer, the GM, the offensive coordinator, all these things going on out there.
I mean, you know, that's been going on for a while, the apathy there, the way that program has gone downhill. Now, it's funny, I mentioned that I have experienced this. I've covered a Michigan State-Cal game in 08 when I think they were both ranked preseason. It was an ABC primetime game, and there were plenty of seats available. Now, Saturday night season opener, two good teams. Cal was like, you know, not long after Aaron Rodgers and stuff. Like they had it was a good era. They had Javid Best on the team, and like they were probably 10,000 empty seats. And the night before that, or two nights before that, a couple buddies of mine went to like Stanford, Washington or something, like a decent game. And it was like, man, there was like nobody here. They were good then. So yes, it is part of the West Coast. It's so different than the Midwest or the South when it comes to college football. Texter does say it's a sign of the times. People barely make a living, so first thing to go is overpriced tickets for a sport. I mean, I think there's probably some truth to that, but also like that's true everywhere, and you're going to see every spot occupied in a lot of stadiums. Like whether it's smart or not to spend that money and go and spend money on that instead of like groceries, people will do it. I mean, in other parts of the country,
102,000 people on the stands for Tennessee and Furman coming up this weekend. It's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
There will be. So, yeah, I get it. I understand. Things are expensive. It ain't like that everywhere else. Like, people are showing up to the games. So, I could not believe what I saw. At USC specifically, Stanford was pretty bad too. But the USC one specifically, I was just like, it's top 15 team in the country.
Right.
And there's no one in the crowd at all.
Heisman candidate quarterback.
615-737-1025. Our phone number. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 with us coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.